Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada, continuing my podcast series with people who are participants in the global mobility industry. And my return guest today is Wayne Buick, who is a partner at Trowbridge International Tax, which, as I've said before, is actually right down the street from me here in Toronto. So it's nice to speak with somebody with whom I'm so familiar. Our first discussion talked about generally, people perhaps wanting to leave Canada and other countries because of suggestions of wealth taxes and all these kinds of things. We also touched on the issue of second citizenships, et cetera. But at the end of that podcast, we kind of left it with our topic for this podcast, which is pension mobility. And I have come to see this as simply an unbelievable problem for people who've worked their lives or a good part of their lives and have accumulated pensions in one country, who then are considering severing tax residency with that country and moving to another one. So a hellishly complex problem, and I'm happy to welcome Wayne into this discussion today. How are you today?
Hi, John. I'm good. Glad to be here again.
Well, so I've kind of dumped, one of the world's biggest problems on you, and maybe we could begin the discussion with, most of these kinds of problems, you can kind of pick up a book and at least get your bearings and, get a sense of what direction to move. But I find this to be a terrifically difficult problem. Would you agree?
Yes, definitely. And I think one of the issues with international pensions is, a lot of times people will just assume because it's recognized as a pension in one country, it's recognized in another, which is not always the case. And that can lead to sometimes punitive double taxation as well. So there's just so many sort of pitfalls when it comes to international pensions.
Right. So it seems to me, based on what you just said, that the starting point would always be, am I dealing with a pension, right?
Right.
All right. So somebody walks up to you and says, Wayne, do I have a pension? How would you answer that?
Well, as a tax person, I'd say it depends. But yeah, so you'd have to look at it and depending on, what country it's in, whether it's recognized under the treaty or not, that's kind of the starting point.
So, could you give me an example?
So a lot of times, and this was just changed, but in the past, Canadians say they had RRSPs, right? That they assumed were pensions, and then they moved to the UK, and all of a sudden the UK doesn't recognize it as a pension, and then the UK taxes it on the yearly income, and Canada only taxes it when you take it out. Now, again, this was just changed, but this is an example of where you can run into some serious double taxation.
But this could be, that's just one example. But so to generalize what you're saying is, I think this, and correct me if I'm wrong, in all likelihood, if it's some kind of a plan that is defined as a pension in your country of residence, that probably means that it has tax deferral on the growth, because that's what pensions are about.
That's so far, exactly. So good? Right. Yes.
All right. So let's say the RRSP qualifies. We all understand that, and tax deferral. What you're now saying is that you move over to the UK, which is a country that taxes on worldwide income, correct?
Depends. Depends how long you're going to be there. Like once you're there more than 7 years, or if you're domiciled, then yes.
Let's say you move to Germany then.
Okay, perfect.
Somewhere. Yeah. And we'll assume that it taxes on worldwide income. So one of the first things you would check is, would the German tax authorities require you to include the growth in the RRSP as taxable income every year? Have I got that right?
That's exactly it, because you need to make sure both sides are taken into account. And a lot of times people just assume that, it isn't. So that's always a big problem.
So, this is shocking, I think, to the average person, because if you take this to its practical meaning, what this actually could mean is that somebody who spent a good number of years building an RRSP in Canada, who then moved to another country that didn't recognize it as a deferred growth vehicle, would all of a sudden be having to pay taxes on growth in the RRSP without even having access to the money. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, to give you another example, you know, for people that sometimes move back to the UK, you know, from the UK, you can roll your company pension into something that's called a SIP, which is a self-invested pension plan, kind of like the Canadian RSP. Now, from a UK perspective, that's tax-free, but Canada doesn't recognize that. So if you do that transfer, just thinking it's fine in the UK, all of a sudden you can create a massive amount of tax owing in Canada. And a lot of times people leave their companies and they're like, they want to move it out of the company pension. I mean, it's a massive potential double taxation without even realizing it. So, you know,
I think it's even worse than double taxation. You know, when you say double taxation, I'm kind of thinking of income being distributed in two countries taxing it. But this sounds to me like taxation on growth when there has been no distribution, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you know, making it even worse. So, I mean, leaving aside the principle of it, I mean, one could imagine that people wouldn't even have the money to pay the tax on that, right?
Yeah, because sometimes you're not allowed to pull the money out from one country, right? But if you've created, you know, a tax liability in another and you don't have the funds,
You know, that, I mean, this is just shocking, you know, as we think about this. But yet, you know, all the years that, you know, you and I participated in these various kinds of discussions, I almost never hear the problem of this coming up in the discussion. Almost never.
Yeah, I think because it really is country specific too, right? You know, so there's so many different pensions in so many different countries and whether they qualify or not, you know.
But you're talking about a situation where unless this is remedied by treaty in some way, you're talking about a situation where theoretically somebody could not leave Canada because by leaving Canada and assuming taking tax residency in another country, they might be subject to tax on money they never received.
Yes. You know.
Woo.
Yeah.
So is the best advice, don't anybody go anywhere? You stay within your borders to avoid.
Yeah exactly. Or make sure you really think it out before you go. And you double check every country that you're going to and every movement you make, you know, because even not doing anything, for example, not touching a pension could still create problems in the new country. So it's just really making sure that you're thinking about this.
All right. So, you know, so think about it. So, you know, what does that mean? I mean, how does anybody think about anything with this degree of complexity? So going through the order. So the first decision that needs to be made would be, are we dealing with a pension or are we dealing with some kind of entity that is recognized in a treaty as permitting continued tax deferral? Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, I think it's Article 18 of at least most of these US treaties and probably the Canadian ones as well, generally is where you'd look to resolve the pension issue, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would assist with defining what a pension is. And in some cases, you know, would get tremendously specific. For example, I think the Fifth Protocol of Canada-US Tax Treaty includes a Roth IRAs.
Right.
As untouchable under certain circumstances for Canadian tax purposes. But that's the U.S.-Canada thing, you know, where these problems are, you know, I think clearly better anticipated.
It's funny, too, because the Roth really kind of acts like a tax-free savings account to a certain extent. But the tax-free savings account is not recognized by the U.S. yet because they haven't done the.
Well, now it's interesting you bring that up. I was actually thinking of making that the topic for another podcast. But let's talk about that a little bit. My reading of the treaty, which I will say is nothing more than my reading of it. It certainly doesn't make it right. But I think the language is broad enough to include things that are analogous to the Roth IRA, is it not?
Yes, people have taken that position, which is probably a position that you'd want to take if you're creating, if there's a lot of income that's generated in a TFSA. So, you know, it doesn't specifically say TFSA where it does the Roth. So,
Okay. So was the, and this I really don't know the answer to, but it would seem to me that it would be helpful to know what the date was on the fifth protocol that brought the Roth IRA into this and the date of the introduction of the TFSA in Canada. I think the TFSA in Canada was introduced in 2009, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know? And I mean, I certainly don't, so I'm not holding you.
I feel like the Fifth Amendment was before that, so.
I think it was. Yeah. I think it actually was.
Which is why they haven't, why it hasn't been addressed. And, you know, you'd like to think it would be specifically addressed in the future. So.
Well, I think the language is strong enough to, you know, for one, to I think reasonably take the position that it is entitled to treaty protection. Mm. You know, somebody went to the United States, but that, you know, that's a fascinating topic. But what it also does is shows you, you know, how these problems of just, you know, leaving your country, you know, can really sneak up on you in ways that, you know, 99% of the population can't even anticipate.
I mean, even the Roth election was supposed to be an election filed, right? So on the Canadian
return. There absolutely is an election that's supposed to be filed for the.
And how many times do people know that, or do they even think about it?
Well, I certainly will confess that I have talked with a number of people who didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Okay. No. You know, and then you get into the issue of, you know, how do you fix that? And my general feeling on it is it can be fixed, but boy, is it uncomfortable.
Yeah. And we deal with that all the time, right? When you know, someone comes over and they're dealing with someone who's just not that knowledgeable on some of the specifics, right? You know, it's such a specific thing, right? So, you know, a normal Canadian tax practitioner is just not aware of it. And next thing you know, there's a whole, you know, it can be fixed, but, you know, it's painful, right? So.
Well, it is painful. And I think it's also somewhat uncertain. You know, in terms of how to manage that. But I mean, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, another, you know, cross-border mobility problem, you know, in Canada, I've seen is this T1135 nonsense, mm-hmm. You know, where you get, you know, what is that? One of the famous cases on that, some American from Michigan moved to Canada and kept their principal residence there as a rental property or something. And, you know, literally declared all the income on the Canadian tax return, but didn't report the existence of the rental property on that T1135 form. And you know, can you imagine? I mean, was subject to penalties for this? I mean, how is somebody even supposed to know this stuff?
I mean, and the T1135, the one thing is if you have US stocks, right? Inside like a Canadian brokerage account. So you're at CIBC, US stocks count for that. And all of a sudden, if it's more than 100,000, you're supposed to report it. And people are like, but it's in the Canadian, I'm holding it in Canada. I'm declaring all the income, it's going on a T5. And you know, and next thing you know, more than 100,000, the penalty is 2,500 a year. Both spouses have it and it's 5,000 a year, you know?
Oh, it's, I mean, this stuff is obscenely unfair. It is obscenely unfair. You know, even the question that the way they ask it on the tax return, which, you know, obviously I don't have in front of me, but I don't think it's broad enough to, you know, for somebody to imagine that, you know, a piece of rental real estate that they used to live in would be included in that. I mean, do you agree with my assessment on that?
We see that all the time. You know, someone has a property in Florida, you know, and then all of a sudden 1 or 2 years, they're like, well, you know what, why do we rent it out? And they rent it out for a month, a year, just to get a few $1,000. Well, all of a sudden that has to be reported, you know?
Because as I understand the T113, if it's a personal use thing, it does not have to be reported, but if there's, then once it moves into income. Yeah. So in other words, you know, put it very simply, snowbirds who own a home in Florida better be careful, because if you rent it out, you might be subject to a reporting penalty in Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody could even make this up in their heads. Would you agree?
No, I would agree. And I mean, a lot of times it's right. You know, people include the income. They're not even trying to do anything. They just don't realize about this form. It just, they don't think about it. And next thing you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really shocking. And then, you know, going back to the pension thing here for a minute, you know, I've read all these, you know, all these snippets of articles here and there over the years of people who, you know, have developed sizable pensions and then moved to Canada and are shocked that Canada taxes their pension. I mean, I don't know if they should be shocked or not that Canada taxes their pension. I suppose it's worldwide income, but, you know, it underscores what a big problem global mobility has become because of the, you know, because of these rules. Do you think that, I mean, obviously, this is what I think. I think it is urgent that there be some kind of international treaty on the recognition of pensions.
You know what, I think that's an amazing idea. I think it's really interesting that they haven't done that. And sometimes they address country-specific issues in certain treaties, but to not have an international standard on pensions, I think it's almost criminal.
I think it is criminal. But what I find fascinating, now that you mention it, is, so, you know, there's all this hoopla about this wonderful common reporting standard.
Yeah.
We're going to, by God, we're going to everybody send information all over the world. Wouldn't that be a wonderful opportunity to incorporate into that CRS an international agreement on pensions? Mm-hmm. You know, which, I mean, I don't know what the specifics would be, but it surely would be written in a way that you're not penalized just for having a goddamn pension.
Yeah. I agree with you. It really, you know, what if it's recognized in one country as a pension, then it should just be recognized in the other.
Oh, I think absolutely. And this is, you know, we talked a bit about the U.S. thing last time, but, you know, this brings me to, you know, I don't know to what extent you're aware of this, but a year or two ago, the IRS went on a $10,000 penalty binge on these 3520s, right? And, you know, of course, people file 3520s because they don't understand whether they have to file a 3520. Yeah. So they figure, well, you know, I don't understand the form, so why don't I file a form? You know, of course, what they really aren't getting is that the only way to get a penalty is by filing the form.
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
But, you know, but that said, you know, then in 2020, Treasury came out with RevProc, what was it, 2017, that specifically exempted a number of things from 3520 reporting, which seemed to me to be generally aimed at foreign pension plans. And, you know, my thought on this was, you know, rather than try to be specific about the terms, why not, you know, under the FATCA IGAs, there are all these pension carve-outs for every country, why not just include a clause that says, you know, anything that's recognized in a FATCA IGA is not reportable. It doesn't require a 3520.
Yeah, I mean, they got that. They got that RevProc totally wrong too, you know.
They got it wrong though. They got it. Well, of course they got it wrong. You know, because they were asking the wrong question. Okay, you know, the question they were asking is, well, why don't we exempt, you know, the non-U.S. programs that are exactly like U.S. programs, right?
Exactly. I know. That's why, you know, in the U.K., like a lot of the U.K. one doesn't qualify, and it's they just didn't even think about it. You know, it was ridiculous to think that every pension has to meet sort of the same U.S. requirements.
Well, I think a wonderful idea would be for the OECD to retain Trobriq International Tax to write this treaty. Peter would love it, don't you think?
Oh, I think he would. I mean, that's a great idea. He would love that.
You know? No, well, I think it is a great idea. I mean, I think that A, this is absolutely essential, but B, I think it's got to be done by, you know, the people who actually see the carnage of this in real life. Mm-hmm. Which is unreal. I mean, on the issue of carnage, a couple of years ago, when one of my visits to London coincided with your presence there, I was listening to something that you did with, I don't know, it was some, anyways, somewhere where you were speaking or Trowbridge was speaking, and you were talking about, you know, the UK voluntary disclosure program on the Canadian RRSPs, the people who hadn't reported these RRSPs to the UK government. What was all that about?
Yeah, so that was just one of those things where, again, everyone just, all the Canadians who moved with an RSP, they just assumed that it qualified for the UK because it was their retirement savings plan.
It's my savings. I mean, what the hell's going on here? Well, yeah. You know, it's tax-free. That's the point of it.
Yeah, and then so up until, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, the UK was taxing it as if it was just a normal account. And so there was, you know, much, you know, the penalties the UK were going to impose on people who weren't reporting overseas income was massive. So it just was this crazy thing of, you know, innocent, completely innocent people not trying to hide money or anything, getting caught up in this rule that didn't make sense, you know, and was unfair. So
so it was some kind of an amnesty program that presumably got them out of the penalty problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had to go back and file. I think it was like even after 10 years, you had to calculate all the income that wasn't reported.
This is amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing.
Well, the problem is people don't keep their records because you don't necessarily need to report it from Canadian perspective. It's just a distribution, right? So you don't necessarily keep good track of your basis is here and there. So it was just so
really, Wayne, the message I'm getting from you is this, in very simple terms. If you ever think you might want to leave Canada, you better keep detailed records in anticipation of that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, nobody would think that was shocking, yeah. But you know, to give you a sense of how, I mean, this stuff is frightening. You know, when people get caught in the crosshairs, it's absolutely frightening. You know, I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago who, you know, I mean, committed the crime of leaving the United States and teaching English abroad. Can you imagine something as nefarious as that? Mm-hmm. You know, in any case, you know, got involved with something, you know, some kind of deferred compensation plan in this country. Of course, didn't see it as anything at all. And then on a flight magazine, starts reading about 3520s and PFIX and everything. She doesn't even have that much money, but she's scared to death that the whole thing's going to be confiscated.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is just sick. It's sick.
The penalties can be more than the you know, the value of the account. Yeah.
Well, that's right. That is truth, justice, and the American way.
Yeah.
Shocking stuff. Absolutely shocking. Well, this has been great. And, you know, I look forward to picking this up with you again. But let's see if we can just synthesize, okay, a couple of very, very basic points here. Point one would be, in simple words,
don't assume, you know, don't assume your pension in one place is
a pension and another.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Don't assume. Step two would be, if it isn't, what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Step three would be, we go to the treaty to find this. And step four would be, when we can't read the treaty, we call Trowbridge, right?
Exactly. I love it.
All right. Awesome. And your coordinates again?
First name dot last name, WAYNE.BEWICK at Trowbridge.ca, TROW bridge.ca.
That's right. And you know what? I mean, we can laugh about this stuff, but it is really, really serious business. It is incredibly serious.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, your firm has done a very, very good job of, you know, getting this on the radar.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, it really is pretty much invisible. Anyway, Wayne, this has been great. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, John. Talk soon.
Thanks.